Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And I'm Philip Sage with ARMS Reliability in Australia.
Hey, Philip, you know, we were just chatting about a couple different topics, but I saw a press release that ARMS is going to maybe change names or become affiliated with a different organization. By the time this recording comes out, it's probably going to be more widespread. But what's that about?
Well, what I can share is what has been released in the public domain and some talking points. ARMS Reliability was acquired by Bentley Nevada, and Bentley Nevada is a Baker Hughes company. So we will, at least in the initial period, we've been told that we'll retain the ARMS identity and the ARMS brand, and that it will be business as usual. Over time, as companies acquire each other, perhaps that changes. But the Bentley folks were pretty proud of the fact that they had been able to retain their identity through multiple changes during their tenure with General Electric and then Baker Hughes after that split. So I think there's a strong chance that ARMS will continue to do what we've done. The exciting part would be to think about the marriage between Bentley's System 1 and ARMS 1PM to bring condition monitoring APM capabilities together with asset strategy management ASM and put that underneath one roof at the same time. That offers some very exciting possibilities as to what you could do in the advancement of asset management.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. So good luck with all that. I know it's always, you know, it's always I held my breath the first time a company got bought or, you know, changed ownership, basically. Is the check going to clear at the end of the month? That was my main concern. But I think you guys will be fine.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So after the first one, then, you know, they got all the wires appropriate and then you're in good shape. But good luck with that. That sounds like a lot of fun. And yeah, opportunities as it goes. But one of the things we were chatting about before we got started was more on, I've run into it a couple of times over the last couple of weeks, and it's not been a specific question that we've gotten. Well, it's related to one question, actually, and it might even be a whole different episode. But somebody said, I'm running a test, and part of planning the test is I should assume a distribution of some sort. And I think it's a Weibull distribution because of the nature of the failure mechanism. But what beta value do I use? What slope of the thing? And I don't have history on this. And I thought, you know, that's a good question. Not just for your particular circumstance, but it's good that you asked that. Is there a way to get a good answer? I think is a more important question. And it brought to my mind, you know, as you're working in the reliability field, we have spanned so many different disciplines. You know, the statistics is just a part of it. There's material science, there's supply chain management, there's all kinds of stuff. But how much do you need to know? You know, how good at something do you need to be? How do you move forward? And so this person's question sparked that thought for me. Is like, that's the key in my mind. Is kind of getting to the main point here is that under the assumption that you never can know everything,
yes,
which is really tough since we're creating new knowledge all the time, how much do you need to know? I mean, how, and I think that's kind of struck my mind. I don't know what you think of, if you've run into it or not.
First, I profess, and I'm in agreement with you, Fred, that even though many of us are sometimes referred to as reliability experts. I was once kind of red-faced, but introduced by a client to his boss as the best reliability engineer on the planet.
I'd agree with that.
Others that probably qualify for that role, but you know, I appreciated the compliment. But I think it's reliability is a journey. it's a field that is so wide and diverse that you never can actually master all of it. And I think that anybody who probably professes that they know all of it probably doesn't know what they don't know. And I'd be very surprised to, and I'd actually be very willing and would enjoy talking to somebody who truly has cotton close, because those are the people that we all want to associate with. Even at my level of experience, which includes many, many, many years and studying some niches of reliability very intently, there's still things that I would like to know a little bit more about. So I think reliability as a profession is a journey, and it's one where you need to continue to learn every day a little bit more and continue to put those tools into the toolbox.
Well, I want to come back to, you know, how you go about doing that as you progress, because, I mean, I've got some references upstairs that they're not that useful anymore, and move on particular topics, and I'm like, okay, we need to move on from that. But there's the other part of this, though, is it's not like you get a CRE and you're done, or you get a CRMMRP and you're done. It's a milestone, but it's not the end line. It's not the goal. I had one mentor told me, you need to know enough to one, solve the problems in front of you, you know, help create solutions. Yeah. But two is know when your solution is good or not, is question it, is, you know, is, yeah, is check your assumptions. He was always beating that into me, but it was, you know, especially if I'm doing a process or a technique, some statistical technique I'm not all that terribly familiar with, and I, you know, get up to speed and learn it real quick, and I apply my data set to it. And then he would look at me and go, are you using the right tool for this problem? How do you know?
Right.
You know, he didn't check my math. He checked, is it the right wrench? You know, kind of thing. I don't know. I got a number. And so,
yeah, I think having a great mentor to help guide you and help share those experiences is a vital part of any organization's growth plan. Too many organizations leave that as a casual, you know, attribute that maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. Mm-hmm. My early days in the steel business, I had a great mentor, and I recall once I came back and I'd solved a problem, and I was all excited about the fact that I'd figured out how to solve it. And he says, you haven't asked the most important question, Phil. And I looked at him dumbfounded, and I said, well, what's more important than solving the problem? And he says, you don't understand. We want to know not only how you solve the problem, but how many more of them are there out there. And, yeah, you know, it was teaching me to, you know, not just think about what was in front of my face and that immediate challenge, but how do we promulgate that solution throughout anywhere else that type of problem exists or could exist and that we don't know about it. And that was thinking that wasn't in my mind at that time. And he helped me learn to think a little differently, which I think is one of the key things that a mentor can do as they share experiences with you.
I agree. Having a good mentor is pivotal. And I mean, I've had a number of bosses. I don't know that I would have, one or two I would call a mentor. One was a director of engineering, a couple levels above me. And I noticed he was in early in the morning, and I tended to beat traffic and get to the work early and then leave a little bit earlier in the afternoon. But I stopped by his office and just asked him a question, and he had time for me. During the day, he was in one meeting after another. You never saw him. And, you know, over a couple of years, it wasn't scheduled. If there was something on my mind, or he'd say, hey, stop by tomorrow, I got something for you. We would chat, but it was very much informal. I think he enjoyed sparking, you know, questioning things that I was working on, and I used him as a sounding board. Am I thinking about this the right way? Those kind of things. Yet when you start in reliability, you know, and a lot of people are just tapped on the shoulder and said, hey, Phil, you're the reliability engineer now. Get busy. Okay, what? What do I do now? And we pick up some textbooks. We might go to a conference. We, you know, we might talk to some of the other folks that are in that role. What do we do and don't do? But I find that there's two kinds of people that go into it. There's one is, I'm going to do FMEAs, or I'm going to do root cause analysis, or I'm going to do this. And they get adequate at it. They get okay at it. And they run, they can take a problem. Think of it as a meat grinder. They take the problem and they stuff it in the top of it. They turn the crank and they get an answer. And they might get efficient at doing that, but they know enough to do that task. Yet I see that approach, and it's not confined just to reliability engineering by any means, but it gives them a purpose. They add a value to the organization. They don't optimize it. They're not asking that other more important question that you just referenced. They're not looking at how it connects to other things, for example, or how does this feed into other parts of the system, or how do I, from FMEA, how do I get better at hazard analysis or at risk management? And how do I, you know, all the other aspects that bridge off of just that one tool. But that's the other kind of person. The other person is constantly looking at, well, I'm thinking of my workshop. I don't have enough wrenches yet. You know, I've got little bitty ones and great big ones, but I know there's another one out there I don't have and I might need it someday. And I'm kind of that way with the reliability stuff. I'm not a specialist in any particular sense on any one field of it, but I'm versed in a wide range of tools. So part of it is being able to recognize that here's a tool that will apply for this problem, and then master the application of that and be able to help it. But I find that there's, well, and you mentioned earlier, somebody introduced you as an expert. I was introduced one time years and years ago about that. And I was like flummoxed because I didn't even have a gray beard yet. I thought you had to be old to be an expert. And they said, no, you just know you're about 2 weeks ahead of everybody else. So you look like you know it. I'm like, okay, I can deal with that. But the main point is that some people want to wait until they learn enough so that they really, really know it and then go work at it. Others work to a certain level and stop growing. But how much do you really need to know? Like for FMEA or for accelerated testing or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. How much do you need to know? And I would answer by saying you need to know enough to be able to do what you need to do and to recognize that you've got the right answer and that you have confidence in it. All too often, currently I'm working with some folks who are doing a lot of statistical analysis with Weibull, just chugging data in to one of the commercially off-the-shelf packages and getting a number. And that number is the life expectancy of a particular asset is 200 some years. And the normal lifespan of those assets is maybe 35 to 50 years. So we know that 200 years is probably not correct. the challenge is to continue to, to back check and, sanitize or sanity check, not sanitize the answer to make sure that you've got something that, makes sense. Now, how it makes sense, and especially when you're starting out young in your reliability journey, you don't have that experience. You don't likely have that experience. You may not have gone to school for reliability engineering, although that's increasingly more likely today than it was 20 years ago when people were just anointed and the title of maintenance got changed to reliability. As a result, we've got a lot of reliability engineers who don't have the strongest of mathematical backgrounds, and that's not necessarily required for certain roles and certain tasks. So, to have common sense and to apply that to make sure within the experience that you do have that it makes sense, and when it doesn't feel right or look correct, that you have an outlet or a mentor or somebody that you can reach out to and begin to ask those questions. And that mentor may be within your company. And as I've progressed through my career, many of the people I bounce questions off of, sometimes crazy niche questions, are scattered around the globe today. Yeah. But they are the true experts in that area of reliability. And I, from time to time, call them, and they, from time to time, call me. Mm-hmm. So it's that's the type of relationship I think you need to work towards.
Well, it's, I mean, you're talking about networking, and it's not just how many people you have LinkedIn connections with. It's how, if you've got a question, who are the three people that you know well enough that you'll get an answer, you can have a discussion with them about it. You know, they're, and they know they can call you about particular things. So, you know, your network is robust enough to facilitate that.
Well, and finding, as you get deeper and deeper into the details, and the interesting thing about our generation of reliability engineers and the up and coming generation, our generation, Fred, let's call us second generation reliability engineers, mm-hmm. meaning that the first generation did a lot of the foundational work and a lot of the theoretical work in the 50s and 60s and early 70s. Yep. And that we have followed that work and expanded it or been part of the expansion into what the field of reliability is today. The next generation is going to take the tools to the next level, but also at hazard is whether or not they're going to use all of those tools correctly and whether or not those tools are capable of doing the job that actually needs to be done in order to get the answer that they're after. But we'll see. So I think, you know, a lot of the disadvantages, a lot of that expertise from the first generation is now limited to papers that have been saved and books that are still on the shelves of libraries. And other than that, a great majority of that expertise and that the ability to call somebody up and have them explain it to you is now gone. And I don't know what your thoughts about that are.
No, I agree. It's I have a couple of thoughts, but I wanted to summarize real quick, because I think we touched on a couple different areas. Is that, I mean, part of it is that it's a journey. I like the way you phrase that, and part of it is being inquisitive and curious and having enough knowledge to get a sense. My old boss used to call it a sniff test, right? It's kind of a gut feel or whatever. This is too good to be true, we got to check something. And I had another guy I worked with that he always tried to solve the problem two different ways, you know, just different methods. And say, are they, you know, they might not get exact same answer, but are they consistent with each other? They're not 180 out from each other kind of thing. Or he'd run past somebody else. You know, here's my work. What do you think? Because this is an important piece. Does this look right? Or did I make any mistakes? There's processes you can build up around yourself to, and then learn if something's not right. Well, that's an opportunity for experience. But as you get experience and as you get more, you can ask better questions. And so working with a mentor helps you frame those things better and look at things a different way. But there's just the books and conferences and basic study, understanding the fundamentals. Try it, check your work, get feedback. And then it's, you know, look for those opportunities to chat with the folks that really do know a particular area or help you to master a particular area. They may not be the expert, but they can ask you the right questions to get you to think about it a different way and move on. But I think the fundamental question though is how much do you need to know? Well, you need to know enough and want more. I think that's a key part of it. I don't know. I mean, when we've talked about, you know, university programs, we've talked about different ways to learn things. But the question I got, you know, that was posed about an accelerated life test and setting it up was really they asked the right question. You know, how much do I need to know to set up a plan? How well do I need to know that? And that's a detailed question. And we could do we could do all kinds of stuff to sort that out. And I gave him a couple of ideas of other opportunities rather than historical data to get an answer and move forward. But they asked exactly the right question. It's like, I don't want to just pull a number out of the air here. That doesn't feel right. I need to know more. And I think that's the key. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It'd be interesting to hear some feedback from our listeners as to what they think is the right question. How much do you need to know? When is enough enough, or enough plus one? Are those relevant topics? So I'll throw it back to you, Fred, and you can put the finishing touches on another session of Speaking of Reliability.
Oh, man, I have to sign you up for marketing here, Phil. Wait, that sounded good. please do join the conversation. Let us know what your thoughts are. And if you're starting your career or mentoring other folks, what's your take on this? Where you can get a hold of us at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a contact form there. And you can also find Phil and I and the other hosts on LinkedIn or on the Ascendo about pages. And as usual, we always look forward to hearing from you. And with that, I think we'll say that we'll wrap it up right there. All right. Thanks, Phil.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.